Well, it looks like we forgot to record an intro again. Nothing Important, episode 27. Let's go.
You're listening to Nothing Important. Please enjoy the show.
That's great. That works.
So like I was saying, wearing headphones while doing this is really weird to me, Dave.
Yeah, we don't really need to right now because we're not talking to anybody else.
Right, and it's weird because I'm like, what, like 4 feet from you?
Right.
It's not like the time we both recorded off of one microphone, but it's so weird that we're talking with the headphones on because we just got off the phone with a guest.
Yes.
And one of the things about when we talk to the folks that are nice enough to come on our stupid little show, it always amazes me is how they never sound exactly like how you think they'd sound.
Well, part of it is probably being over the phone.
Yeah.
And time changes. So they're at a different part of the day than we are sometimes. Like, I think he just woke up, the guest we just talked to.
Right.
Which has happened a few times. I think Owen Benjamin was like early in the morning.
Like, and he just got off a flight, yeah. You know, and he's probably like, oh, I got to call these two assholes I've never heard of before. But I think it's just like a lot about like the perception too, right? Like we talked to Dan Severin and Dan Severin by all accounts is a badass.
Right.
Like the dude could literally fucking kill you if he wanted, right? Like, and you could punch the guy and it's not going to phase him. You know what I mean? But when you talk to him, he has like a very soft, like oh, hey guys, how's it going?
Hey guys,
like,
how's it going? Yeah.
Yeah. Like just a really.
I almost did a Jay Leno impersonation there.
Like, hey guys, look at my chin. I drive cars. I make almost every joke I make is about Bill Clinton, even though he hasn't been in office for 20 years. I'm Jay Leno. Like, we're shit talking him. He's worth so many $1 million. Yeah, and like, we live paycheck to paycheck. And we're like, yeah, I'm Jay Leno.
I'm better than you. No.
Actually, I'm sure he's like a super, he's super cool guy.
Probably. And I mean, he's very, very, very successful. So far be it for us to talk shit about him.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, there's a level of, there's a general consensus, I think, that there's a level of celebrity that entitles you to be sort of a dick, or you're kind of expect that person to be sort of a dick.
Right.
We went through that with the Patrick Fabian. I went through that with the Patrick Fabian thing. Like, I kind of thought this guy was going to be an asshole. Turned out to be awesome as shit.
One of the coolest fucking dudes ever. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Like he, even like, the after the cold closing or the fake closing, like he was still like the nicest guy, you know, because he wasn't putting on airs for us.
Right.
But yeah, sometimes you're just shocked at like, holy shit, this is a real person that likes to have conversations with strangers and share interesting new stories.
Well, you know what the thing about it is like, we live in Chicago and notoriously people always say Michael Jordan's a dick.
Yeah.
Like it's a pretty big thing around Chicago.
And that, Pippen
like,
too, I think.
Yeah, Scottie Pippen is
no tipping Pippen.
No Pippen tipping, right? He's like super cheap and he's a prick. But what I think it is like when you reach that level of fame, everybody is on your ass all the fucking time. You know what I mean? Like nobody likes to be nagged.
Right.
Right. And I couldn't imagine being so fucking famous that going to the grocery store is a chore.
Right.
Because people always want autographs. Like, this is kind of a cool firsthand story. My wife works with some professional athletes. And she works with some professional athletes, and they tell her little stories. And one of the women she was working with was talking about her husband, who was a St. Louis Cardinal. And they just
moved.
Right. But they just moved up to Chicago.
I hope she did a bad job.
Right. Like, they just moved up to Chicago. And the wife was saying one of the best things about Chicago is that it's so big and there's always somebody famous somewhere. That here it's not that big of a fucking deal.
You can kind
of
get lost in the crowd.
Right, yeah. But like in St. Louis, she said it was the worst fucking thing. You can't even go have a hamburger because somebody would always come up and be like, dude, sign my fucking shirt, sign my fucking hat.
And as awesome as Chicago fans are awesome. Like that's not even, I've been around, I've seen things, you know, so I can tell you music venues are awesome in Chicago and sports fans are super passionate. Right. St. Louis is on another level of passionate. The Cardinals fans are fucking crazy.
Yeah.
They're fucking nuts. They're all about their team. They're the kind of team that will boo you if your double play wasn't good enough. You know?
Why do you think that is?
They demand the best out of their... They have that level of success, and they demand it from their team at all times.
Really? Do you think it's because
it's all they have?
Right, yeah.
Like, and it's all they have.
Like, yeah. I know for a fact we have listeners in St. Louis. I see the stats, fuckers. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so St. Louis people, don't take this the wrong way, but, like, it's kind of like how New York City probably looks at Chicago. Right? We're like the little sibling.
The second city.
Right, yeah. Like, we're like the cousin twice removed, where it's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, they got their own thing going on, but they're not us.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, maybe since it's so much smaller and it's in kind of like the middle of America and mm-hmm. it's like
the gateway of the Midwest.
Here in Chicago, you can drive 70 miles and you'll never see farm field because there's all the suburbs everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like LA, you lived in LA. It's very much.
I'm actually going to correct that because Chicago's about 30, 40 miles.
Right.
LA is about 80.
Okay. But you know what I mean? Like you can drive a long ass time and you'll never see a cornfield, right? Right. But like St. Louis, I've been to St. Louis a bunch of times, and man, I wish I could remember the barbecue place. They only open like once a day, and once their food is fucking gone.
Patty's.
It might be it.
I think it's Pappy's Smokehouse.
That's what
I think. It was on Man vs. Food.
Oh, yeah.
We stopped there. When I moved back from LA, we stopped there.
Oh, so good.
We got the Atom Bomb.
So good.
So good. So if you're in St. Louis, yeah. Or if you work for Pappy's Smokehouse.
And we'd like to sponsor the Nothing Important Podcast.
Seriously, that shit is the bomb.
Absolutely. But they don't, but like everything is so condensed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a big deal. And like, you know, like being a professional athlete, that is a big deal. You mm-hmm. know, like there's so much athletic, it's such a combination to be a professional athlete. There's such a combination of having the right genetics, the right drive and
right opportunity.
Right. Luck. And the right skills. That's, mm-hmm. that's why not everybody's a fucking
right.
elite athlete, you know? So down there, because you know, like there's probably a few hundred thousand people in St. Louis, we're up here. In Chicago, in the city proper, there's 3 million with like 10 fucking professional sports teams.
Right.
You know, and then up here, there's so.
I think there's the general metropolitan area is also much bigger than St. Louis's.
So right. So
even
like,
the near population.
Right. So down there, it's probably a bigger deal because those
you're
are
a bigger fish. You are a bigger fish because your team is fucking the best team in baseball.
And through his teeth.
And the pond is so much smaller. So you stick out. Yeah, much, much more.
Right. And also there's such a, because of the size of the population up here too, there's such a, such a wealth of people who are successful in so mm-hmm. many fields, you know, like, mm-hmm. like if there was a professional sports team in Fargo, North Dakota, the person that makes $5 million would be a big shot because people would be like, $5 million fucking dollars for playing right. basketball. That's fucking amazing. Like, jock this guy, jerk, right?
Right, right.
But like here in Chicago, the most popular basketball player, Derrick Rose, who probably makes like $10 million a fucking game or whatever.
Oh, yeah, he's the highest paid athlete.
Right.
You see the highest paid basketball player for sure.
You see what I'm saying? But he could walk downtown and there'd be some investment banker or real estate mogul or shit that would be completely unimpressed by that because like, motherfucker, like I make 10 times that. Plus I got stock options.
Right.
What up? You know what I mean? Yeah, right. Like, oh, that's a cute beginner's Ferrari.
You gotta take the training wheels
like,
off.
Like in Chicago, there's people that are so rich they don't even park in the parking garages. Like every time they go to work, like they park the car out front and like a helicopter just like skylifts it to like somewhere. And then at the end of the day it'll drop it right in the middle of the fucking Miracle Mile and then they can hop in and drive off.
They just talk into the wrist like, car pull around to the front, please. I'm ready. Like the Batmobile.
Like the Batmobile, exactly. And then they get in a bad neighborhood and they're just like shields on. Like every time they see a guy who has like a funny sign like I need change, you know, they're just like shields on.
I was going to go back to the point though about you know celebrities being approached because I was listening to a podcast of a friend of the show, who's a minor celebrity I would say he's met you know a lot of famous people.
He's known. Yeah, very well known and
like I have to explain to some people but some people have heard of him but they
just on a side note we're not going to name drop but he's going to get a lot more well known he's got picked up for a couple more projects so mm-hmm. it's going to be awesome so congrats to him and
yes.
Congrats to this person that we may or may not be making up, but we're not, but we may be.
And who's not going to know that we're talking about this person because we're not saying who this person is. But, and he was having a discussion with another friend about this exact topic
mm-hmm.
and you know, the super celebrities kind of put up a shell because they think they're like the hot girl that always thinks that somebody's trying to fuck them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like every time someone approaches them, it's like, what do you want from me?
Right.
So they put up this shell, but if you come at them without that attitude, you know, then they'll be more receptive to it. But if you come at them like, you know, like, hey, you're famous and I want a piece of that, mm-hmm. you know, they get so used to that, that they just kind of put up this wall.
See, and that's why I don't think I'd ever want to be that famous.
Yeah. I've said that too many times. I don't want to be I don't want to be that successful because, for one, I don't want to put that much time into anything because I like having a life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to have to be watching my back or hire people to protect me.
Right, exactly.
You know, I don't want to have things that people want from me that bad.
Right.
I guess you could say.
See, that's
except like, my penis.
Even on other projects, our very minor level of notoriety that we may have ever had with our band like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like we play shows and we would have like 400 people in the crowd. And then, of course, because we're not shit, you know, we'd get off the stage and we'd just be like hanging out and drinking with everybody else because there was never a limo waiting for us. We never had a tour bus. You know, like we'd have to vacate the green room because like they have to vacuum the floor. You know what I mean? But it was always weird to me. Like there were people that would come to every show and sometimes mm-hmm. drive a couple hours and stuff. And sometimes we get off stage and, every once in a while, like two or three people would come up to me after I got off the stage and like start peppering me with questions or be mm-hmm. like, or like singing a song that I sang back to me. And like, as much as I appreciated that, I was always like, hey, like, how about everybody just fucking chill and we just have some drinks? Like, yeah. So I couldn't imagine having a face that's just like incredibly noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
And then like people are running across the street just to fucking,
yeah,
just to say hi, which is awesome because it's like, you know, these people appreciate me so much that they're trying to say, you know, they just want to say hi. They just want right. to be there and get a fucking selfie with their fucking stupid selfie stick.
Right.
You know what I mean? But like, and you're like, well, all I'm trying to do is pay the fucking parking meter, dude. Yeah. Like, cause I gotta go buy.
I'm just trying to buy some groceries, man.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think a good level of fame would be somewhere in the middle where everything is taken care of financially. But like, I don't think I could do that thing where you can't do shit because you're always in tabloids. Right. Like that seems like hell on earth to me.
Yeah, I remember one time we played a show in our old band and we went into a Denny's the next day and for breakfast, the whole band, and apparently walked by a table and people were whispering, like, oh, those are the guys from the band last night.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear that, but you know, the drummer did, and he mentioned that. And I was like, that's about the highest level that of recognition I would want.
Right.
Like hushed whispers around you is kind of cool, but people think because they think they're a part of you mm-hmm. when you're that famous. And I don't want to share my life. Well, with
plus,
people like
plus
that.
At like a very minor level of fame, it gives you an out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Cause like people can come up to you and be like, oh, are you Dave? And if you don't want to be bothered, you'd be like, I get that all the time.
Yeah.
People, you know, mistake me for them all the time, but you know, like, no, I'm sorry. And then you could kind of go on your day. But if you're like fucking Tom Hanks or fucking, Brad Pitt or Jennifer Aniston or something like that, there's no out of that.
Right.
Like there is no way out of that bullshit.
Even people that kind of look like them get hounded.
Yeah. Well, and then speaking of that, you know, what's weird to me is that when you're that level famous, people that kind of look like them, not only get hounded, but are also able to build careers because they kind of look like that.
Yeah. Person. That's retarded.
Like I don't get the whole imposter thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't get it.
I would never, like, it would never happen in a million years, but if there was ever, like, Dave and Brian imposters, you know what I mean? Like,
I would feel uncomfortable about that.
I'd be like, dude, that's the weirdest fucking thing anybody could ever do.
And you're making money off my face.
Right. It's odd, right?
You're making money off my face and your face.
Yeah. Maybe we should start asking some of our awesome guests that come on, maybe we should start asking them how they handle being recognized, because
if we ever get somebody that famous. Just joking. We've had some pretty famous people.
Yeah. You know what I mean? We just got done speaking. Yeah. We just got done speaking with somebody. Well, fuck it. I'll just say it. So we just got done speaking with Epic Lloyd from Epic Rap Battles of History. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll probably be on the tail end of this conversation on this actual episode.
Mm-hmm.
But he, millions and millions of people watch him, download him, listen to him. Like mm-hmm. he's a legit known person.
He's a known commodity.
And I wish I would have asked him how it felt the first time somebody recognized him on the street.
Right.
Because I don't know how I'd handle that. Like, because I'm weird, like people that I knew in high school,
mm-hmm.
you know, like 100 pounds ago and 20 years ago or whatever it is, I guess 15 years ago. Like, I'll be in some random place in Chicago, like getting off the train, mm-hmm. and somebody from our hometown just happens to notice that I look a lot like Brian from high school. And you can ask my wife, there has been a couple of times where like I took it as an out and just being like, no, I'm sorry. I went to school in Indiana or some shit like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I couldn't imagine not having that out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's why I chose the career that I did. Because even when I was playing in bands, I never had the illusion of being a rock star. You know, mm-hmm. I do it for fun. But I like being a part of the top tier of production.
Right.
So I chose the other route. Like, I've worked with, I was making the joke earlier, I'm kind of vicariously heading towards an EGOT. Like, I've worked with an Oscar winner, I've worked with a Grammy winner, I've worked with a Tony, or Emmy winner.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to work with these people. I don't want to be that celebrity. You know, I mm-hmm. like the anonymity and just being a part of the project. And the final product is awesome. But I don't want to be the face attached to it. I don't want that level of celebrity.
Speaking of which, did I ever tell you about the time I broke an Emmy?
No.
All right, we'll save that for another podcast.
And now an excerpt from the Book of Things Dave Doesn't Care About.
Bronies, beasties, BDSM novels, furries. Are these still things? I don't know, they're weird.
This was an excerpt from the Book of Things Dave Doesn't Care About.
You're listening to Nothing Important.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the Someone Important hotline, it's Epic Lloyd. Lloyd, thanks for coming on our little podcast.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
No, it's absolutely awesome. Dave and I, we're big fans. We you know, obviously there's the Epic Rap Battles of History, but we're also really intrigued by Diss Raps for Hire.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Thanks. Those are cool. I like those songs.
Yeah, and I absolutely love the whole concept. So you have people write into you about issues that they're having with, like, maybe a coworker or somebody they go to school with, and then you basically are their voice to the masses about how much of an asshole their antagonist is.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like kind of like a, you know, an extension of somebody. You know, I get to be, you know, I am their rage, whatever that, you know, Fight Club thing is. You know, like, I am whoever's like rapping rage. So it's cool.
That's awesome. Now, how many, if you don't mind me asking, how many of those requests do you get a week? Because it's kind of taken off, and you've done several seasons as such. How do you filter through all the requests, and how do you determine who exactly you're going to use?
I get a lot. You know, I haven't. They kind of come second to the rap battles because that's such a big project. So
right.
I haven't done one for a while, but I was actually just working on them last night. It's kind of like my voice is all sore. I get a lot of suggestions in the comments, and, you know, pretty much everywhere that you're able to get in touch with me, but whether it's like Twitter or Facebook or wherever, I try to find a topic that I haven't necessarily done before, you know, something that has fun details in it, that seems something that feels true, you know, mm-hmm. and then, something that's like, cause there's some people, sometimes the internet is like, people's main source of outlet to like talk to the world. So sometimes there are some stories on there that are almost like too much. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, I wish I could call these people and like give them a hug, but it's not the right song to do at this time. So that's one of the hardest parts about the series is finding the right suggestion and then kind of bringing it to life.
Right. Because you want something that can, appear as real, but you also don't want to trivialize the circumstances of the people who are writing you.
Yeah. You know, I leave a message in the bottom of all the comments saying, like, you know, if you're getting hit or if you're in a serious situation, you need to call these numbers. And I list like some resources where people can call. You know, it's like writing a rap song about domestic abuse. That's not what this show needs to be about. It has to be a little bit lighter than that.
A little too heavy of subject matter sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We were actually just listening to some of them before we hit the computer problems. And one that has always stuck out to me, and it's one of your earlier ones, is Jennifer, the girl who was like sleeping around on her husband while he was in the war.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see that as a heavy topic, but the way you handled it was so good. Correct me if I'm wrong. Don't you have family members who are military?
Yeah, my little brother is, well, yeah, a lot of them. My grandfathers were both in the military, and my dad was in the Army Reserves, and my little brother right now is serving in the Navy, and he's a, yeah, and I think maybe when he was first, like, starting to get into the Navy, because he's quite a bit younger than me, is maybe when I did that, maybe I was a little bit tender about it. You know, I was like, oh, man, fuck this. So, but yeah, that one has been, I never realized how, I mean, a lot of guys in the service felt like really connected to that story, which was kind of a bummer, but also I'm glad that I was able to do, you know, do something.
Yeah. I was going to say that that's actually a kind of universal topic. I've, you know, a lot of friends in the military as well. And you hear the stories like that all the time. And like some women are just evil, evil to the guys that are just sacrificing their life to, you know, serve their country. And for you to do something like that and kind of bring it out and like show, you know, that's a pretty cool commentary on it.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, not only that, I think what helps it too is your voice when you rap. It's it's like a really good like voice.
It's got that nice edge to it.
Yeah, it's like it's such a good like listen the fuck up kind of voice. And I think the reason why that one sticks with me is because the beat's catchy as hell.
Yeah.
Your lyrics are awesome. And then, you know, it kind of shows that like, it's something that like you relate to as well.
Yeah. You know, like when a small dog gets in a fight, you know, he's got to have a pretty good bark. You know? how it works for me, I think. But yeah, I mean, that was always like, the whole series started with just a kid. Like, YouTube used to look a lot different than it does now. So you used to have like this front page, almost like a homepage, but it would be like the front page of your YouTube. And this kid just wrote to me about his brother, you know, kind of picking on him and beating him up and stuff. And it was just like, man, that sucks. It just kind of pissed me off. So, and then of course I think I was like honing that kind of skill with the rap battles at the same time, playing some of the characters like, you know, whether it's Hitler or Stalin or any terrible people. So yeah, I've got the snarl.
Well, that's awesome, man. And then, you're also really, really big into improv, and that intrigues, Dave and I, cause it's such a unique skill. Like, you know, me and Dave like to pretend like we're clever. We make like, you know, it's lame jokes and we try to be really clever and funny, but to be an actual clever, like on the ball improv guy, how did you find your love for improv? What got you into improv?
Well, that's a long story, but, I was an athlete in college. I was a gymnast and I was always doing in high school too, you know, so I was like Division I and stuff actually. So, I was always into like high school plays and stuff, but never did anything comedy at all. It was always just like high school plays, you know. But then in college, I was competing in gymnastics, and that took up a ton of time. It was like a full-time job, but I got hurt. I fucked my knee up. That's why I didn't even swear. I mean, messed my knee up pretty bad.
We don't censor language on this show, so feel free.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. So I just, you know, I had surgery on my knees and stuff, so I was like on crutches for like 6 months out of a year. And I was in college and I was taking like this acting class like on the side. And in the acting class one day we did like this improv game and I was like pretty fun at it. I was pretty good at it. And then so that night we went and saw like a play, and like some kids sitting next to me said, hey, we were doing this improv team. So I went and auditioned for this improv team, and that was like, it immediately clicked with me. I was like, oh shit, this is awesome.
Like that was your moment. It's just like, I could dig this. Like this is something I'm adept at.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it was like one of those things where like, I was really like, as a gymnast, you're either going to be in there's no like professional gymnastics. You're either going to be in the Olympics or not. So I was like doing all this work, you know, and it felt like the whole world was kind of pushing against me. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing this improv and like these people that I met, and they were, like, it really clicked with me, and then everything started falling in place. So, like, me and a bunch of the guys that I was performing with there, I actually convinced them to, like, I was like, fuck this school, let's drop out. So we all dropped out of college, got in the van, moved ourselves to Chicago, lived in a big house, and just studied at Improv Olympic and Second City and The Annoyance and, you know, went, did everything. And then, and that's like in college is when I first started rapping too. Like we would freestyle at improv practice with freestyling and stuff like that. And that's how I first started rapping. So then, yeah, we studied all improv and then we started touring with Mission Improvable, the name of my improv group, you know, that still tours now. And then we, and now that we're out here in LA, we have a theater. It's called, West Side Comedy Theater. And that's, I started that with the same guy that I did improv with in college. And that's how, I mean, yeah, improv has just been sort of like marbled into everything that I've done. That's how I met Pete. That's how the rap battle started. So it's pretty cool.
That's cool. And it's like an exercise, you know, you're training your brain that way. And then you're, you know, the epic rap battles, you have a lot of characters that you play and the diss raps is, it's all from different perspectives. So it's that creative and you're rapping from different perspectives all the time. So it's pretty cool that it started with improv and performing it live. Right.
Yeah.
And then now it helps you just kind of crank stuff out faster too, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it helps with, you know, collaboration when you're working together with someone. Writing songs is like a really weird thing to collaborate on. A lot of times writing a song is a very personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, if you're, when we write these rap battles, we're like doing all this research and we're working with several writers. And then when we're on the set, you know, you have a whole bunch of stuff that's going on. So being able to just like work together with people and build upon ideas is super helpful. And obviously just, you know, the actual acting part about it, you know, once you get that costume on, like for me, I just open up. It just does everything for me. So I can just kind of go, you know, and a lot of times I'll just let it roll and I'll see what I do. So it helps a lot.
Right on. I find it interesting that you competed in gymnastics in college and got hurt and you had to make that decision. Cause I wrestled in college and I competed. Mm. I competed on varsity my freshman year, and I also got hurt. And it's weird when you spend your life training whatever skill you're training, and then all of a sudden, like, it's taken away from you, and you have to make that decision. Because I specifically remember when my shoulder got broke, and they were like, dude, you're never going to wrestle again. You need reconstructive surgery. And, like, it's almost like, well, where do I go from here? Because your entire life is all built up around that sport. Like Dave and I went to high school together, and the whole time, like Dave will tell you, my focus was like, no, man, I'm getting out of this town. I'm going to wrestle and I'm going to, you know, like I'm going to wrestle through college. And then it was taken away. So that's awesome that like when you had that moment that you found something that you could focus your energy on.
Yeah, it was tough, man. I remember because after a while, you know, when you're an athlete like that, part of it's because you love it, but part of it felt like obligation after like 15 years, you know, you're putting in 30 hours a week or so as like a 13-year-old or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you sort of, it's almost like, I think of wrestling in the same way. It's like, it's almost like a martial art. You know what I mean? It's like, it becomes almost like a part of your identity.
Right.
And it was very tough to like let that go. It was really tough to let that go. But once I did, it was just like, I felt like it was weird. Like the world just put stuff in my way that was helpful versus putting things in my way that was like hindered me, you know?
Yeah. Right on. So now, you do the rap battle obviously. And I try not to talk about that too much. Cause that's pretty all well documented. You know, you do the improv, right? A few people have listened to you before, right? Like doing the, you know, I think I might have seen it once or twice on like some website or Twitter or something. I don't know, but
somewhere.
But you know, you do the diss rap for hire. You do the improv. You have your improv company. I know you've acted in a few things, which Dave might not know. You were actually in the league for an episode, right?
Yeah, I did. I did an episode of the league for sure.
Right. See,
which episode of the league did you do? Did I miss that one?
I don't know. The title of it was, I'm not sure. It was about, it had played a porn star. I played the porn star version of one of the guys.
Andre, you're Dr. No Dick?
Yeah, that's me.
I did not realize you're Dr. No Dick. That is fantastic. I'm a little starstruck
so
right now.
Andre Nodick.
That's awesome.
Well, honestly, congratulations on that, because that's a kick-ass show with a really, really loyal fan base, actually.
Yeah. It was weird. It was like, I went in there, because the guy I'm supposed to look like, I forget this guy's name.
I can't remember. Paul Reiser. No, it's not Paul. It's not Paul Schaefer. Paul Reiser.
Yeah, I did an episode of Mad About You. It was great. Paul Scheer. So I went in there and I was auditioning for this role of like a porn star lookalike of his. And it was me. And then actually the guy in there, I also knew him. His name is Chris Tom, and he's a friend of mine, but he's probably like 6'4", full head of hair, like big Viking looking dude. Like, if I don't get this part, I'd give up acting. I'd quit acting. So it was fun. I got that. And then that. But I didn't really know anything about that role. Like, when I showed up, they're like, here's your wardrobe. And it's like this tiny, like, beanbag holder for your freaking nuts. And I was like, is this? What is going on? So then, like, basically that whole scene, I was, like, just kind of tossed into it. I was like, okay, well, let's do it.
The show itself is partially improvised, right?
Yeah, they do it really loosely. Like, they didn't, when I was there, at least, there was no, like, quote-unquote director. There was two executive producers, and I think they were a husband and a wife, and they just, like, they acted as the directors, and you had your beats, and you had your points that you had to hit in terms of the lines and stuff, but then their main guys, they would just kind of let them kind of riff off of each other as much as they wanted to, and they caught a lot of great stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah, very cool. And then I know intermittently you release your own songs, like before we came out, and also we also played your song Rampage.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I felt so dumb because it took me like up until a week ago. I was like, oh, the video is like the video game Rampage. It's like punching the buildings.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot sometimes. Sometimes it takes me like years to get things. Like Dave told this stupid joke about three guys walking into a bar and the fourth one ducks. And I was like,
it's two guys walking to a bar, the third one ducks.
Well, whatever it is. Like, I'm like, I don't, why is that so funny?
Oh, you got to duck the bar.
I know.
It's a pun.
I know. I'm fucking idiot.
I drop puns all the time that Brian doesn't get.
Yeah, I don't know if you ever listen to our show, but like half of it is Dave making like funny jokes on the side, but I like gloss over them because I don't catch them. And then afterwards, I'm like, oh man, I had an opportunity to say something there because that was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, you guys, sometimes you got to let those ones go.
Yeah, well, Before we hang up with you, you are coming on tour this summer, correct?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Right on, man. You're kind of hitting some of our old haunts, Bloomington, Illinois, and you're going to be in Chicago in September, I believe.
That's correct. We will be.
Right, and this is the first time you've done the tour, correct?
Yeah, this is the first official Rap Battles tour. Pete has gone on tour quite a bit in the past and done like the Rap Battles on stage, but it's never been like the Rap Battles show. So this time it is, and we have a DJ and we have a couple guys in the band, and we're gonna bring some costumes and we're gonna bring people up on stage to rap, and it's fucking gonna be cool. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, that sounds really, really fun.
Well, that's awesome, man. Me and Dave, we're based out of Chicago, so we're definitely going to be there. You'll see the two chubby guys dressed like schlubs will be there. we'll be there cheering you on. And I'll be sure to post all the tour dates. Not that you need our help, but post all the tour dates and everything on our website. And, you know, maybe we can get you a few extra people in the audience.
Yeah, thanks very much. You can find tickets and buy tickets at nicepeter.com. Mm-hmm. And all the dates are listed there. Chicago is the... And middle of September, I think it's like September 15th or 16th.
Now, are you guys going to have any opening bands while you're touring, or is it just strictly you guys?
No, we're touring with the Jackpot Golden Boys, who are a duo, and they're really cool. So they'll be opening for us on all the shows in the United States and probably in Europe too.
That's awesome. Because I was going to suggest what you should do is double dip, and you should have Epic Lloyd opening for epic rap battles of history. When back in the day when Dave and I had a band, we used to like to get extra money. It'd be us doing acoustic songs that we would then play with our full band like 10 minutes later.
The same set twice.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, well, you could pay us our guarantee. And then if you throw in a couple hundred extra dollars, we got this other band that could totally open for us. And it was. And so what was so great is because me and Dave had very limited material, it would always be us playing the same songs that we would play with the full band just before we played with the full band.
Hilarious.
Well, awesome. Lloyd, thanks so much for coming on our little show.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. And then the most important question that we ask every guest is, what's your favorite frozen pizza?
Oh, that's a good one. I got one from Trader Joe's. It's like barbecue chicken frozen pizza. It's in the freezer. So I'll have to cook with that.
Man, we got to hit up Trader Joe's.
Yeah, no, that's like the most popular answer right now.
Yeah, is Trader Joe's. Except for a couple people are
pretty
like...
good. It's a pretty good, you know, I'm like a, you know, I'll rock out a Ralph's frozen pizza from time to time. But like sometimes, you know, I'm not 22 anymore. I can afford the extra $2 for that Trader Joe's.
Do you add toppings? Because we actually get most of the Trader Joe's people add toppings to their pizza. I've never... even thought of that in my whole life.
Right, yeah. It's something so simple and we...
you just rock out the cheese?
Well, I get like the sausage and mushrooms, but you know, some people are like, I'll add this and add that. And I'm like, it's a frozen pizza. It's like a prepared meal. I feel uncomfortable adding to it.
Oh, yeah. I've never heard of that. That's almost sacrilege. You don't mess with the... There's some intimate magic going on in there. You don't want to...
Right. See, like you don't
it's
add
a contract that I signed with Tombstone. I can't augment their product.
You don't add extra inches. You don't add extra inches to Michelangelo's David's wiener. You should add extra toppings to your frozen pizza.
Yeah. That's exactly the same concept.
Such a great parallel.
Thank you. All right, Lloyd. Well, we're going to hang up then. Thank you so much for coming on Nothing Important, and we'll definitely see you this summer in Chicago.
All right, you guys. Thanks a lot for having me. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. All right, Dave. That was Epic Lloyd from various projects.
Various projects, yes.
Very cool dude, right?
Yeah, very cool dude. Very, I didn't know about the improv stuff and how much that's kind of affected his career because it's a very improvisational style of entertainment that he does.
Yeah, and what really struck me is I kind of got more personal than I actually like to get whenever we do the podcast, but I totally felt where he was coming from, like competing, mm-hmm. you know, and when you make it to a college level, you know, and you're competing and you get hurt, and he was absolutely right. That becomes so much of your personality and what you want to do in life and mm-hmm. everything you've succeeded thus far. It, you try to shape your future with that, right? Mm-hmm. Like I never thought I'd be like an Olympic wrestler, but I totally had my future planned out where I would at least make it through college. Mm-hmm. And I never thought I'd be like an NCAA champ, but I felt at some point I could make it to the show.
Right. And you know? That's what you're working towards.
Right.
I mean, at some part of you believe that you could, you have to have the drive.
Right. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And have the expectation of the entitlement of it. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Right. And then when that all stops and you have to pause and reevaluate what you want out of life, because everything you now know has been, it's mm-hmm. over. Like, that's it. You know, that's probably why like athletes cry when they retire is because
I was gonna say like I have a different perspective because I played football all my childhood, mm-hmm. but I knew going into my last game, for one, the coaches knew we weren't gonna win, so we didn't even try. So I knew this was my last game going into it, which is the most heart-wrenching thing I've ever been through.
Right, because you want to fight, right?
Because you want to fight and you don't want to give up, and there's still, it's the first round of the playoffs, so it wasn't like, you know, this is the end of a season. Like if we won, we kept going, but we knew we were gonna lose. I knew I was never going to play football again. Like in going into that game, I knew I was never going to play football again.
Yeah.
So, but it wasn't like something was taken from me because I chose, like, I'm not going to go to college and play football. Mm-hmm. This is where my career ends. I kind of chose that. And it wasn't like, you know, I didn't suffer a career ending injury and it wasn't a sudden out of the blue.
Right.
So I kind of got to prepare for it, mm-hmm. but I still fucking bawled my eyes out for 3 hours after the game was over.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's because it's something you're passionate about. Right. And then now you just have to change course a little bit.
Right.
So,
right.
But you know, it was very cool that Lloyd shared that with us, and you know, incredibly nice dude. And you know, I'm glad that he's having all the success doing what he loves to do.
Mm-hmm. Talking to successful people is pretty awesome.
Right, exactly.
You can hear their passion when they're talking about what they do, and it's been a cool thing that we do here.
Yeah.
I like
it. Right on. All right, Dave. You can stop recording now.
Be sure to follow Nothing Important online at nothingimportantpodcast.com. Find us on iTunes, on Twitter at NotImportantPC, and you can also find us on Facebook. Nothing Important is recorded with help from Third City Sound in Joliet, Illinois. Thanks for being awesome.